G'day and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I'm your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates miss the show at any time, you know, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify and CFRC Podcasts. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to my last interview with Piyush Sahar, who is doing a PhD in computing under the supervision of Dr. Salome Chowdhury and Dr. Kai Saloma. Welcome to GradChat, Piyush.
Yep, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here today.
That's good, good. So, Piyush, thank you for coming on the show. You started your education in Bangladesh?
Yes.
So what made you come to Canada and Queen's to do your graduate work?
Yeah, so I actually came to Canada to pursue my master's at University of Lethbridge. It's in Alberta.
Yes.
So after completing my undergrad degree, I always had the dream to come to a developed countries for my higher studies. So I decided to come to Canada because the main motivation for me was it's a very peaceful and very motivated country for higher education. So I came to Canada in 2017 for my master's. After completing my master's, I was in a software company, worked there for around 3 years in Toronto.
Okay, during COVID you were doing that then?
During COVID, yes. Yeah. So it was like I started before COVID and then during the COVID I worked from home. Then I decided to come to Queen's for my PhD. It was a tough decision for me though because my family members were surprised, "Oh, are you leaving the job?"
Yes.
Yeah, but I left it because I had the dream to come for my PhD.
Well, that's good because once people have had the taste of getting a full-time wage every week, it's hard to go back, isn't it? And go,
okay,
I'm not going to get a full-time wage now.
Yeah.
So your family is here with you then?
Yeah, my wife and my son is with me. My son is 3-year-old.
Ah, right. So born here?
Yeah, he born in Toronto.
Nice.
So he was 2 months when we came to Kingston. So,
wow.
So he's kind of like birth town is Toronto, but he's Kingstonian right now.
I love it. And so before long, you'll be sending him off to school.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So we are planning to send him to school in this September.
Nice.
So hopefully he'll be in campus in this September. I mean, Queen's campus.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Well, it's nice that you've got your family with you because I imagine coming from overseas to do something like your studies. Yeah. It's difficult if you couldn't bring your family with you.
Yeah, it's definitely a good support. Like we feel relieved and we can focus on our study or job, whatever we are doing.
Have you managed to have your extended family come and visit?
Yes. So my mom visited on 2022.
Nice.
And also my mother-in-law and father-in-law, they visited last year.
Had to be on your best behavior.
Yeah, definitely. My mother-in-law actually visited twice.
Oh, nice.
Once in 2022 and again in last year.
To see the baby?
Yeah, to see the baby and the daughter as well.
I'm sure they will be here a lot more often.
Yeah, they were happy. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, there's nothing better than your family being happy where you are.
Yep.
My mother used to always say, as long as I've been to visit you, I can visualize where you are and everything's then okay. But when she can't visualize, she finds it difficult to make sure that I'm going to be all right.
Yes, because they have some imaginary concepts or thinking on their own, right?
Yes, exactly.
So when they come, they can see, okay, that's what it is.
Yeah. So that's good. Well, I guess we should get on to doing a bit more about your work. Otherwise, we could be chatting here all day.
Sure.
Now, you're in computing, which, as I mentioned before we started this interview, sometimes the word computing scares me a lot because there's so many different areas in computing that people can get into. Some more obvious to people like me, I'm going, oh yeah, I understand robots, sort of, you know, they work. And other parts that are a bit harder, particularly when it comes to incorporating math.
Yeah.
And so I take it you like math and computing as you work with algorithms a lot. So what's the fascination for you with working with math and algorithms and computers?
Sure, yeah. So like from the first day when I started my study in computing, like at the beginning of my undergraduate study, I loved the logic behind it. So right. The logic in computing, it has a very like fascinating relation between mathematics and computing and some parts of physics. And most importantly, some parts of real world activities. Right,
right. Right.
So when we can connect those, the logic and the real world scenarios, then it's really interesting. At least like I love it. So that actually drives me to continue my study more and more in computing. So one of my favorite thing when I do my study is to do some outside puzzles, like outside beyond academia,
right?
Some logic puzzles or some real world puzzles which I can connect to my study.
Okay.
And that actually really fascinating for me.
Well, I'm glad it's fascinating for you, because I remember when I had to do a computing class and they said, Colette, it's just all logic. And I go, but whose logic? Because my logic doesn't seem to be working on the same level as you guys are.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. There is logic, of course.
Yeah, one of the major part of in computing is the programming. So we need to do program a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when you understand the underlying logic behind them, like when you can connect the real world scenarios
with
the puzzles,
yeah,
then you actually love it. Then it's not a burden for you. Then you love it. You love to do it.
And you're looking to see what connects where.
Exactly.
And
then it's not hard for you to not sleep for the whole night and do the program. Yeah,
I love that. Because it's interesting when we're talking about algorithms and computing and things. I mean, we hear a lot about the word called big data these days. But the questions are usually around, do we have the data we need, or what are we trying to accomplish here? Data, however, can also be manipulated, which we shouldn't be, but it can. But you seem to have found a way that in your work that data can clearly help with improving certain areas of society. Has that always been your intention with the algorithms and things that you use, to use the data to truly benefit areas of society rather than to try and manipulate results to make it look good?
Yeah, you are right. So like the main motivation of all those works, like designing algorithms and coming up with a computing solution, is to make the society better, is to do some betterment for society. But at the same time, when we are talking about big data, like, I mean, in the current era, we have data everywhere, but we need to use it very efficiently, especially for the computing solutions, because the computing solutions, they are artificial, right? We are designing it to perform some specific task. That means the inputs we are feeding it have some specified format.
Right.
So in order to get into that specified format, we need to be able to transform those data into that format, right? So, and we have data everywhere because of the computing applications everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be very careful how we are using the data. How we are collecting the data, when we are collecting, is there any discrepancy or disruptions between like different parts of data which may cause the solution unfair or biased for a particular community or group?
Yes.
So we need to be very careful on that. So one of big part of my research is actually focused on that, like how we can come up with the symmetrical data platform for the applications that I'm trying to build.
Yeah, because you actually say your research topic is improving efficiency of societal services for the vulnerable through algorithmic approach.
Yes.
So it's I love this word, improving efficiency.
Yeah.
As opposed to improving manipulation.
Yeah. By the way, data manipulation is not bad every time. Sometimes we may need to manipulate data purposely to come up with a solution which is better for most of the people or majority people. But we, at the same time, we need to be careful how we are manipulating it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we manipulating outside of the regulations, or we are still inside the regulations? So come back to my work, so you're right. Like, I'm focusing on improving the efficiency of some societal services. So when I'm saying improving the efficiency, so in the social services that currently we have in our society, like any governmental operations or non-profit or non-governmental operations, There are multiple communities or people from different backgrounds involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have a solid data or like asymmetrical data for all of the groups in order to make the solution accessible for everyone.
Right.
But what we noticed, like as a background study, that if we include people from different communities or marginalized communities, then we don't have symmetrical data. Their data are really scattered. So we need to come up with the centralized solutions to make their data or make their information to be compatible for the computing applications.
So, sorry, can I stop you there just quickly?
Sure.
So we do have these different societies, different groups,
yeah,
and you're collecting data and then working with the data. But as you said, you don't always have the same sort of information from each of those groups. So is the first part of what you're doing is finding a common way of collecting the data, so you're comparing apples to apples?
Yeah, so it's not like I'm comparing. So the first part of my work is, it's actually basically like, if I summarize my mm-hmm. work, I am developing some algorithmic solution based on transforming our real world people as an agent.
Right.
So I'm developing a multi-agent system, which is a part of artificial intelligence.
Okay.
It's a subtopic of artificial intelligence. So I'm transforming a real people, or like imagining a real people as an agent and making a multi-agent systems. So when I'm developing the multi-agent systems, they involve how I want to make a cooperation among the agents, how they are going to cooperate, how they are going to collaborate to perform a task.
Right.
So when I'm talking about cooperating or collaborating, there comes how their preferences are, or how okay. they are going to make their policy of collaborating with the other agents. The first part of data is how the preferences of the agents
okay.
that I'm imagining for a people or for a person, for an individual. So when we are collecting those preferences, as a background study, we noticed they really have different dimensions
right.
of differences. For example, for a homeless and shelter matching problem, we had in a few of my research works. So in that work, we can see like the homeless individuals can come from any part of the country, if we think about Canada. And they have different regions, and their preferences to go into the shelters are different.
Right.
It's sometimes really very diverse. Some homeless individuals can say, I'm not going to leave that city. I just want to live into this city.
Right.
Some homeless individuals may say, I'm okay with any shelters. So their preferences are really diverse. So in order to make that preference as a symmetric platform to be used for the applications that we are trying to build, we need to come up with a centralized systems that can transform different preferences into a centralized one. So we need to come up with a system which can read the data from multiple sources
mm-hmm.
and can come up with the symmetric data.
Okay, so using, this might be unfair, but to using your example, say the homeless, the data you're collecting with their preferences, is that coming from them or from the people who are currently working in those shelters?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So usually for those services, we have a central clearinghouse. We call that clearinghouse. Those can be like any governmental office or any governmental operations or nonprofit operations. So they have a platform which collect the data for them and also run the overall applications or overall systems for them, because they might not have access to that applications. So a central clearinghouse does that for on behalf of them.
Right.
They actually work on those data. But
they're collecting information for how many people come in, what gender,
yes.
where they've come from,
yes.
that kind of thing. They're not actually asking questions of the individual, or are they?
They do.
So, so it's a bit of a combination of
both.
Okay.
It depends on like what the application is.
Right,
like, it depends.
Right.
So when we have that data, then we need to work with making it symmetric for everyone
mm-hmm.
so that we can use it for the application, right? So my first part of work is like coming up with the preference systems which can deal with all those unconventionality or uncertainty on the preferences of the agents.
Right.
So when I'm saying agents, please assume that it's an individual in the society,
okay,
who are involved in the operation or,
yes,
in the service, right? So when we have the agent's preferences, we need to deal with those unconventionality or uncertainty. So my first part of work is how we can build a common or centralized preference system which can deal all those unconventionality and come up with a singular system or symmetric system to make it compatible to use for the application.
And we can use it across the country.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you come up with this then, because one of your things you mentioned earlier is that, you know, some people want to stay in the same city, others want to move. Are you hoping then that with the system, are you saying that if the person gives approval, they can be moved to a different city to, yes, help balance the number of shelters and making sure we're maximizing the shelters?
Yeah, definitely. So there are lots of factors involved. The shelters have some support services, which may be specific for that shelter. And it is possible some homeless individuals only need those support services in order to recover,
right,
themselves, right?
Right.
So it depends on matching those support services as well,
mm-hmm,
and how we can utilize those services. Some shelters may have more capacity than the others. So how we can utilize those capacity as well. We don't want to leave that blank because we have very limited resources, right?
So basically there's two main goals, isn't,
yeah,
there? One, to maximize the services available,
yeah,
and two, ensuring that the individual
get faster recovery.
Get the opportunity quicker,
yeah,
in an area that they want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that first part of work, when we have that symmetric preference systems, then my second part of work is actually coming to the core part of computing, which is like transforming the total system as a multi-agent system. And there comes some computational game theoretic approach. So when I'm saying game theoretic approach, it's like in a multi-agent system, when it's a matching problem, for example, the homeless shelter matching, or when it's a coalition-based problem, for example, coalition or team up of some agents for some social work, like disaster response. So in a disaster response system, there might be a team of volunteers who are teamed up for a particular work. So there can be a coalition system, there can be some matching system.
Okay.
So in my PhD research, I'm particularly focused on matching and coalition-based problems of multi-agent systems. So there are like many theories involved, which is particularly from game theory, how the agents are being cooperating, or like how their,
right,
policies, if based on a situation, how they are going to react. So those are like all those theories we need to study. And then based on the unconventional preference systems, those theories might not match with the preference systems that we just built.
Right, yes.
So that's one of the significant part of my PhD research, to come up with those analyses, how those unconventional preferences have a connection with already built, already analyzed theories.
Mm-hmm.
If they're different, how we can analyze it, or how we can simplify that.
So maybe I've missed something here. So with this, I understand what you're trying to do. So is this just all modeling at this point, or have you actually got data that you're using to help you?
So I have not worked with real world data
so far, it's just imaginary right now.
Yes. In my experiment, I actually followed some of the governmental report to prepare my synthetic data. For example, the work on homeless shelter matching, there is a government report on shelter report, which is published every year.
Okay.
So they have a really very insightful patterns, mm-hmm, like
robust,
how many shelters are there and what are their capacities and those stuff. Those are really useful reports, and which we can use for our experiment, which is very close to real world data. But it would be good if we can work with real world
data. So if you figure out something, would you test it first on, say, just in Ontario, or just in Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox region? Would you want to try it first on a smaller scale?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That would be an ideal approach, to try with a particular region or particular, mm-hmm, focusing area. As you said, like City of Kingston would be a great example.
we all need to sort of help where we can, can't we? And this would actually be, but it's interesting. I mean, I know you've used the example, say, of the homeless shelters, but do you think with the, I mean, this is all math, and a lot of times with math and computing and all those sorts and algorithms, these models can then be used in other scenarios.
Yes.
And it may just be a slight tweak, but basically the model is the same. It's the data that's coming in or the product coming in is slightly different. Is this what you're hoping that you're, because this would be very helpful for various levels of government.
Yeah. I'm happy that you bring that point because, yeah, one of my motivation or like that's the main motivation actually for my work is to come up with the framework which can be applicable for different applications in that area. So when I'm saying like societal services, that means it does not bounded to only the homeless shelter matching or those particular applications. It could be anything. And I am particularly emphasizing on humanitarian operations. Like I'm focusing the problems on humanitarian operations. It could be volunteer and food rescue task matching. It could be volunteers and disaster response task matching.
Those stuff.
So my models that I'm trying to develop or I'm developing these days, it can be applicable for other problems, other similar problems. And that's what my motivation is. Like I can come up with a framework which can be used in different parts of social services in the government level or maybe in the non-government level as well.
That's awesome. I mean, I imagine a lot of the non-profit places would be really interested in this. I mean, homelessness, food banks, all those sorts of things. You know, where do we need distributions to be working better?
Yeah, so basically I'm trying to show everyone or show those individuals who are working for or who are responsible for those operations that we can model the real world scenario as an artificial intelligence system.
Right.
And that will actually help us to use all those theories or all those algorithmic approach to come up with a new technological solution. So these days we are trying to come up with the technological solutions everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we are actually co-creating some technology for our society, right? So right now the service is there. I'm coming up with example again, like homeless shelter matching. Mm-hmm. Right now the service is there. We have some service maybe we have some manual service which is matching the homeless individuals into a shelter. So we are trying to co-creating the technology everywhere. So when we are co-creating the technology in the society, we need to be careful that when you're doing that, we are not depriving any particular communities or any particular individuals.
Right.
So the first question that comes into mind that are we really accumulating the data or preferences wisely or efficiently so that no information is missing for anyone?
Right.
So in the first part of modeling, that's what our task is, like coming up with a good preference model and then connecting that preference model into the existing game theoretic or computational game theoretic theories. If they are really not aligned properly, then come up with a new simplification or new theoretical contributions, which leads into an algorithmic solution. Because once we have that theoretical contributions, then we can develop the algorithm there. And after we have that algorithm, then we can come up with an applications that everyone can see, like human readable or human usable applications. So the central message that I want to transmit is that's how we can model the real world scenario and come up with a technological solution which is fairer than the existing solutions, because we are accommodating all those unconventionality or all those uncertainty.
So I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, because I totally get what you're trying to do, and having more preferences in there, understanding the situation is great. The devil's advocate part of me says this solution, the world continues to go on to be crazy, and I'm going to use the homeless shelters as an example, could be one way of one province shifting people out of their province to another province that they don't necessarily want. So here we're saying, you know, someone said, well, I don't mind actually moving as long as, but it could be used in a way that's not ethically
correct.
Correct. Yeah. It could be, well, here's a great way now. We can move some of these people out of our province and we don't have to worry about them again.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to them thinking, this is a nice way of us sharing the load across the country, doing the right thing for these people, as opposed to, you know, we've got too many, so let's just shift them because theoretically we can do this. Now, I know that's hopefully not ever going to be the case,
yeah.
But how do you ensure, I guess my question to you then, how do we ensure with these models that we're looking at, particularly if we're looking at how can we distribute services better to more people, how can we ensure that it's not then going to get used for the wrong reason?
Yeah, no, I got the point. So that we can always impose some restrictions on the use of it. Like, for example, when a central body, we can think of government, mm-hmm. is running the operations throughout the country, but each province has some different requirements, or mm-hmm. any city may have some different requirements, we can always put some layers on the using of data in each part of our applications.
Right.
So that will help meeting those requirements of particular city or particular province. And still, they are happy with the applications because their requirements are met.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in order to prevent the wrongdoings or misuse of that, we need to come up with some ethical guidelines, which we can impose on the logics behind the algorithms. Right. So those logics, that's what I said at the beginning, this is really fascinating when we can connect the logics behind the algorithms,
yes.
with the real world scenarios or real world activities. Mm-hmm. Then we can have really fruitful solutions. Yeah.
And that's what I like to hear. Fruitful solutions. None of this backdoor, cloak and dagger stuff. Yeah. Let's be upfront with everything that we do and let's all think about our morals and ethics and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So that was fascinating. Now, I'm going to take a slightly different track here because I'm going to look at your extracurriculars and I love to hear what people are doing. You actually told me you participate in community outreach programs. What are they? Which ones?
I'm particularly saying about Queen's Community or community in Kingston. So in Queen's Communities, we have United Nations Sustainable Development Goals Day in each of the year.
Yes.
So School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs.
I know you gave a talk.
That. Yes. So I gave a talk on that because my work.
Years ago, yes.
Yeah. I think it was in 2023. Yeah. So my works are very much related to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Right.
Because the goals United Nations set for 2030 is to make a society which is equitable for everyone, mm-hmm. which is fair for everyone. And especially we need to think more closely for the marginalized communities. We are not developing any technology which is making them far behind. Right. So we need to be careful that, okay, we are developing technology, but are we carrying them together? Are we not forcing them to become more behind than the developed peoples, yeah. or peoples from developed countries? So that's one of the focus, my research, which is very much related to the problems outlined in the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Great.
So I love to attend on those talks and talk about my research.
That's good.
So yeah, I presented my research on the UN SDG Day at Queen's and also on the Graduate Symposium, which is related to UNSDG.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
So yeah. More you can get it out there, the better for all of us.
Exactly. And apart from that, I love to attend some other outreach activities. For example, we have a science fair for the school-going students.
Yes.
At which is organized by City of Kingston.
Yes, so it's great. Science Rendezvous.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah.
It's a brilliant event.
This one and also the KLASF Science Fair, which is on school level.
That's right.
So I was a judge. I was a category judge there twice.
Because the School of Education, they run that, don't they? Or Faculty of Education.
So those are really great events. Mm-hmm. We can go there and see how our school-going children, I recommend them as a children because, I'm a bit older than them now. So, I refer them as a children. So it's really great to see how school-going children are thinking mm-hmm. about the new worlds or coming worlds, right?
Yes.
So they're thinking what will happen after 10 years or after 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. If this scenario comes up, then how can I come up with a solution? So I can give one example, like when I was judging one project. So one kid who was in just grade 6, I guess. So he was talking about how we can make the garbage management system more efficient, how we can detect the garbages so that we know there are people who throw the garbages in any of the bins, right? So he thinks, okay, we can't stop people, but what we can do, we can detect what's inside there, right? So he's thinking, like, it's just an example. He's thinking beyond what will happen after 5 years, what will happen after 10 years. So when I attend those events, it really helps me to understand how the future generation is thinking about those solutions.
Which is good.
And I can also discuss what I'm doing to them. Okay, look, at this point, we are doing this. So I'm not sure what will happen after 10 years, but
it's a good thing to think about, isn't it? Yes. And get them excited and try and come up with some solutions as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, so that's brilliant.
Yeah. So that's one of my favorite activities, which is very much related to my research. Mm-hmm. And I love to do that, actually.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then you also play percussion.
Yeah. Yeah,
which sort of percussion? Is it drums? Is it cymbals? Is it the old triangle?
No, it's kind of drum. So I love to play one percussion which is called tabla. Do you know tabla?
No, I don't.
So it's actually a Bengali, typical Bengali or Indian percussion, you can say. So it has a long history. Like I don't know that much, but I love to play that.
So that's the important part. You love to play it.
Exactly. So my wife singer, so when she starts singing, I just jumped with my tabla and start playing that. Although it's not helping her. And then
you feel good about it.
Yeah. Nobody more importantly, does. My son loves me to play that. So he's my only fan right now.
Well, one's better than none, I guess. Yeah.
And also I like try to play cajon. It's a South American percussion.
Okay.
It's like pretty much similar with modern day drums. Okay. So I can play like with both of my hands. I mean, I can play tabla using both hands, but there are different styles. So cajons are more easier, I would say, than tabla, which fits my expertise at this point. So I love to play cajon as well. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Well, you seem to keep yourself busy.
Yeah,
and you will anyway with a 3-year-old. So
exactly,
Piyash, thank you so much for coming on the show. The word computing will not scare me as much anymore, I don't think. So thank you very much for explaining what you're doing and your part of helping society using computers and algorithms and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and your time on listening to that. And I hope I transmitted the real part of, core part of of my research to everyone.
You did. I'm sure everyone's very fascinated and will want to ask a lot more questions. So,
I'm sure
you still got lots more to do on it.
Definitely. Yeah, there are lots to do. And we have lots of plans. But as a part of the PhD, I have limited time and I need to defend at a certain point, right? So we have plans beyond my PhD. So I hope I can continue that research after completing my PhD. And I would love to do so. So, I'm looking forward to finishing all those plans.
Brilliant.
Maybe after 20 years or 30 years.
20 years. Love it. Okay, well, thank you, Piyash. Yeah. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. And as mentioned, this is also my last time to host Grad Chat. And I just want to say it's been a great experience and a pleasure for me to be on the show from the beginning. So thank you very much to everyone for listening over the years and sticking with me. Moving on though, my colleague Katie Marie McNeil will be taking over hosting duties. So I know you're all in good hands, and because she's been sitting with me for the last few sessions, just keeping an eye on what I'm doing and making sure she has an idea, although it'll be in her own way, of course, not quite like how I do it. Everyone has to have their own flair. So now, don't forget, though, you can download the show just to finish off things properly tomorrow on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. Just type in Grad Chat. This is CJ the DJ signing off for the last time with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.